Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and my guest is Elizabeth Stack, and she is the Executive Director of the Irish American Heritage Museum, newly relocated a few blocks from where I... First of all, you're very welcome. How are you doing there, yourself?
Good, good, thank you.
Now... you made the move because most of us are familiar with your old address. And when you moved, you didn't move that far, did you?
That's right. We're just a few blocks, really. But I suppose in one way, it's another world away. You know, we're down next to the old English pub and the Albany pump station, and very close to the Palace Theatre and the new Capret location. So, you know, there's kind of a vibrancy here. McGeary's Irish Pub is across the street, too.
Right.
So we're in a kind of a more social, I suppose, area, you know.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And we're talking about the Irish American Heritage Museum at 21 Quackenbush Square in Albany. And friends, first of all, you might, if you're listening to the program earlier, you may have listened to the letter which I read, an open letter to Quinnipiac University and to the board there to basically, you know, tell them that, no, we're not going to sit down and take... you know, their decision to just get up one morning and say, no, we're going to close that Irish American Heritage Museum in Quinnipiac University. No, you're not. And if you are, you sure as hell will have to deal with us, number one. And if that doesn't work, well, then you can deal with the, you know, with the Attorney General, and we'll get it that way. It's the Irish Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac. However, and of course, most people would know that the American Irish Historical Society in New York City, that the powers that be, or thought they were, decided that to sell the building. That one is... however, it's closed, but that's not going anywhere either, because the Attorney General of New York is looking into that too, and maybe they'll be sorry they brought it up in the first place. The Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany is under threat of survival, but for a very basic reason. And that is, you're feeling the pinch financially, and maybe you could just address that portion of it.
Well, you know, yeah, I won't comment, I suppose, on the other two institutions because, as you say, there's a lot going on, and probably we don't know the full story.
You don't,
you know,
you don't have a dog in those fights anyway.
Yeah. Okay. But, and now, to be honest, Adrian, I would say, too, actually, not to sound, you know, kind of cocky, but actually, we're, you know, of course, COVID was difficult and, you know, all that, but... the museum is very well managed, I have to say, in the last 3 years. You know, we did a lot of cutting back costs when we could. I was the only employee, for instance, for about 2.5 years. You know, I gave a lot of the talks myself.
Yeah.
And we were well supported during COVID by both, you know, the state and federal. Like, we got the PPP loans that people were entitled to. We got the shuttered venue loan. So we are, of course, always looking for support because we're a small entity. We believe strongly in our education mission.
Yeah.
And so to that end, like, our talks are free. You know, the museum at the moment is free because we haven't installed the final exhibition. Eventually we will charge to come in, but it will be free for our members, you know. So we're doing a fundraiser based on our birthday, like our 35th anniversary. But I have to say, you know, it's always difficult, I think, when you're a membership-based organization.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the aging demographics and Albany is not Manhattan, you know, but the Irish-American community in general is aging. You know, the link is a generation late or further out with, say, every generation, you know.
Right.
So from that point of view, we're anxious to stay kind of present, like, and foremost in our members and in the wider community's mind. Like, the COVID thing, in one way, has allowed us to step into that, I'll call it a gap, you know. Sure. I mean, the American Irish Historical Society didn't really ever do that many talks or anything. But we have about 8 or 10 talks a month, all of which are available online, live, you know, so you can interact on Facebook or on YouTube and comment and ask questions. You know, I think we are the premier Irish-American institution in the country, as far as I'm concerned. Like, we're the only museum, in a sense, like, that talks about the entire Irish-American experience. You know, we're not a canal or a railroad museum. We deal with all of it.
Yeah.
And while we are in Albany, you know, like, we are still, because of how technology has helped, like, we are online. And so I would really hope that, you know, people who are upset about the Great Hunger Museum or the American Irish Historical, you know, would tune into our talks. And just because we're in Albany, we're not a provincial or a local museum. We're a national museum, you know.
Yeah. Good point. And, mm-hmm. But again, I won't help you dilute the need for, you know, a community to, you know, to support your work and ongoing work. And particularly, you know, now at this period, where, the future, you know, is uncertain at best.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point waiting until the lights are shut off. And,
right.
That's the reality of the matter.
And I think that was probably the lesson to be learned, you know, from, like, we were warned about Quinnipiac, you know, in 2018 or 2019.
Right.
I think the stories first broke, you know, you have to become kind of independent. And look, it's a massive undertaking, and you're exactly right. You know, in order for the museum to grow, like, I can't be the only employee, you know, like,
yes.
There has to be more work, more hands on deck, you know, and I absolutely think and the other side of it, Adrian, too, I mean, what if COVID continues? We were very lucky, like, to kind of weather the storm the first year. Now we're into the second year. You know, we reopened last August, but people are nervous. And, you know, now we have a mask policy. We're thinking about ensuring that everybody is vaccinated to come in, and which is the way it is in Manhattan at the
right.
moment. You have to show
mm-hmm.
proof of vaccination. So, like, if that happens, you know, we might have even more dwindling audiences, and there may not be the federal or state money. You know, we're looking at a debt ceiling coming up. You know, there may not be money to
sure.
bail out small businesses or cultural institutions. And, you
yeah.
know, when you think about the amount of museums and heritage sites in the state, like, that already closed because of and never reopened, it's very worrying, you know. So you're right in that way. We like to be positive, you know, but you have to be realistic too. You're right.
The museum, for the benefit of those who may not be aware, was an integral force in, you know, requiring instruction in New York State's public schools about the Irish famine of
mm-hmm.
1845 to 1852. I noticed that you're saying it was 1853. Were your ancestors there for another year?
Well, you know, the harvest recovered, but the immigration continued
yes.
really until 55. So the numbers coming out, you know, continued to come. But you're right, the harvest, the potato was back, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was indeed, and I would like to acknowledge, former Governor George Pataki,
mm-hmm.
Who, again, led the or opened the door to having the history of the Irish famine incorporated into the curriculum in public schools,
mm-hmm.
But also I would like, you know, to have you fill us in on the creation of the just the history
mm-hmm.
of the Irish American Heritage Museum.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for asking. You know, that's, it's amazing, I suppose, to think we're 35 years, you know, going. And really, I think probably from humble beginnings, you know, I obviously wasn't here myself, but when you think it was the brainchild of, you know, some of the American Irish Legislators Society, people like Jack McEnany and a few more of the legislators, and then Joseph Dolan, who was very involved with CSEA and the union, and people even that, you know, I think one of our current board members, Chris McCarthy, his mother was involved in the early days. But it was a very local, grassroots driven, you know, there was a lot of people in Albany interested in their Irish roots. And so they got together and opened this small museum, you know, down in the Catskills. But we were always apparently kind of planning on moving to Albany, being set up in the capital city. And of course, you know, we got support very early on from the O'Dwyer family. You know, we have the library is endowed by Paul O'Dwyer. So it just kind of grew from strength to strength. There was this urge, I think, in those early days in the board to preserve and pass on the story of the Irish in America. And at the same time, not only just to be insular looking, but to look out and to encourage other groups to look at their stories. And so, you know, we made the move back to Albany, I'd say 12 or 13 years ago, and, you know, hopefully now are in this huge location next to the Albany Visitor Centre in Quackenbush Square. So we have, you know, a dedicated theatre space. We have a huge exhibition hall, and then we've the library and offices. So, you know, wherever cognizant of our roots, that, you know, this started small but with big dreams kind of thing. And that, you know, we were always based, the mission was always education driven and outreach driven. And so we're chartered by the State Department of Education. You know, it's, of course, you know, as you said, we the famine is now in the state curriculum. But it also, I think, allows us to sort of compare the Irish immigrant experience with later groups or with, you know, other refugee crises. Right. And the same thing with the famine, like it's, you know, there are still famines today. It's not just, a, you know, the one Irish one. And so as a museum, I think we're perfectly placed to contextualize our past, but also, you know, our present kind of thing. And we do a lot of other community kind of engagement here. Like we just came off this summer an immersion tour with the Underground Railroad Education Center and the Tenbrook Mansion to talk about freedom and opportunity and how that looked for various groups in Albany throughout history, you know. And so it's a great thing to be able to link up, you know, with other kind of cultural and heritage sites too, to examine the story from a few different angles, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's time to fill in our listeners that, you know, you didn't come out or down in the last shower because you actually, you joined the museum there from Fordham University and you taught Irish American history. I was associate director, you know, the Institute of Irish Studies. So you didn't have to learn the job. And in coming in, to that, of course, it was, you didn't have much of a head start, before COVID, but a lot has been done through the COVID period and before. And, I think, perhaps if you were to expand a little bit on the lectures and, you know, the variety of cultural, events that take place there, that might be helpful.
So yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I came, I suppose, with the experience in the Institute academically. You know, I was teaching Irish and Irish American history, and then we had a sort of a lecture series, so I knew nothing about running a museum. So there's a lot of learning to do there. But you know, I kind of quickly realized, because we were a small museum, you know, in a small location, we might not have had an awful lot of things to look at, you know, in glass cases or up on the wall. And so I kind of pivoted really to talks, and we do a lot of showcasing of Irish music and Irish American music as well. We had a film club and a book club pre-COVID. And then, as you say, you know, we had just moved into our new home about a month before COVID hit. So that was a mixed blessing, really, because we were able to do big renovations, you know, in at the back, in at the museum. We built a little thatched cottage and a replica tenement apartment. And then, you know, how do you become a virtual museum when you're a bricks and mortar institution? So we very, you know, we did do our talks online, and we still are trying to do a hybrid, you know, so we look at American history, you know, with an Irish slant. So there might be an Irish slant, you know, on the Civil War, of course. We're Sure. doing two series at the moment. One is called Collars, Canals and Conflagrations. And that's about the Irish in this region, really, and the various, you know, jobs that they did. That's partly funded by the Hudson Valley kind of network, cultural network. And we are doing a series called Immigrant Activism, which is funded by Humanities New York. And, you know, that allows us to look at the contributions of people like Mother Jones, Leonora Barry, you know, these kind of trailblazers who were in the labor union in the 19th century. But we were going all the way up to somebody like, you know, Father Michael Judge or Brendan Fay in modern Irish-American culture, right, and seeing what they active, you know, how they're active in the community.
A little bit about your own background. Word has it that you're from Listowel in Kerry.
And, I am. The kingdom.
The kingdom, yeah. All right. And I can't help but, you know, mention at this point, since we're grasping at straws here, that my county of Mayo did be Kerry.
I know.
And and it didn't do either of us any good.
It did not.
And
I came back.
Yeah, I know. And we'll be supping sorrow with a long spoon until until one of us get back. And we know which one I'm rooting for. Anyway, I want to ask you about growing up in Listowel and how you developed an interest in your chosen career. Did that happen all of a sudden? How did you get started?
Yeah, well, you know, Listowel, I think we're, you drink it in with the water in Listowel, this love of culture and heritage and history and writing. My next door neighbor growing up was John B. Keane.
Oh my God.
He wrote The Field, yeah. Right? You know, so you've no choice, kind of. He wrote The Field and Sive and Big Maggie. So, you know, some of my earliest memories are going into the pub and asking him to tell me a story, you know, and so he told me that the old lady who lived on the other side of us on the street, whose name happened to be Stack, but she wasn't a relative, that she was a witch and that she had a talking horse in her yard. And so apparently I asked to see the talking horse when I was about five. So, you know, our town is designated a heritage town. We were the last town in Kerry to fall during the Desmond Rebellion to Queen Elizabeth's forces, and an ancestor was hanged for, he was in charge of the castle. So, you know, you grow up with the Writers' Week Festival, you know, the horse racing festival, very conscious of your heritage, like, and past. And my father and mother both are kind of amateur historians, you know, and now that the genealogy thing has taken off, Dad is very into that, you know. So it was just always in me, I suppose, to love history. And you know, I pursued that at UCD in Dublin and worked as a teacher for a number of years before I came and finished my PhD and then started teaching at Fordham. So, you know, I think storytelling too is probably sort of in us, you know, the Irish, we love stories and we're curious as a race, you know, if we can, we're not really a race, but as a group of people, we're a curious group, you know, we like to hear where people are coming from and why they're here. And, you know, so I think it all fed in, and actually the museum is a perfect blend of that. Like, I had been teaching since 2002 in either high school or university. And so this museum, you know, is still education based, but you don't have to do the grading, you know, you don't have to do the lesson planning. And so it's a very social job, but I think it's a very important job, you know, of preserving, not only preserving the past, but of sharing it, you know. And as I kind of alluded to earlier on, with each generation, you know, that link is a little bit more tenuous. And so you do want to, you know, like we just had people in this morning who were, they had been to Ireland just before COVID and they were so happy and, you know, that they had gotten to go, kind of thing. But, you know, you hope that their grandchildren are equally as invested, you know, that's our challenge, you know.
And again, you know, there we do know that there are, you know, 36 individuals 36 million individuals who claim Irish history and Irish heritage and ancestry. You know, and somehow, through the ironic lack of immigration and the stupid regulations that somehow we got caught up in, there is now a need for all of us to maintain that connection and to make sure that, you know, it's not one of these situations where we say, as we becomes very easy to the tongue, God be with the good old days. No. Ireland and immigration from Ireland is indeed more important than, you know, anything else. But we can see what can happen unless we keep kicking the door in and pounding. But in the meantime, I don't know if you would agree that we have kind of lost a lot of the new arrivals who used to bring us up to date on the culture and exchange that. That has to have some kind of an impact.
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, we were talking about it yesterday, actually, at the round table with on Taoiseach, and Joan Hinchy from the GAA made the point, like that if we're not continually kind of being re-blooded, we'll say, like by off the boat, you know, Irish people coming in who maybe marry Americans and then their kids become involved in Irish dance or GAA, like that's how you keep the culture going. Because of course, if you're third or fourth generation, your link is very, very tenuous. And you might have, you know, Italian and German elements and you know, there's more than one. So, you know, myself as an immigrant and my sister and her husband are over in California too. And, you know, he's Irish. He's from the same hometown. They both, well, the husband plays GAA. They set up a hurling team over there. You know, and so his kids or their kids will grow up hopefully playing, you know, if they stay in America. But that's exactly right. Like there has to be the new blood injected in, you know, and I suppose, you know, maybe immigration stopped there for a while with the Celtic Tiger and things at home, you know. But it's difficult. I mean, like, you know, I'm on a visa. It's not, it's an H-1B, you know. So there was, I have to say, like, it was, you know, a long process to get that even renewed, you know. And there's I can't go home until November because I'm not a citizen, you know. So, you know, even immigrants that are well-educated, we'll say, and kind of come the right way, it is a... It's not an easy, you know, you don't just turn up at the airport and say, I want to go to New York. You know, I have a PhD in history, let me in, you know. So I think both governments are very aware of that. And now with the nature of work being online, you know, maybe that will change things too, of course. But, you know, there will have to be, I suppose, some form of reform in immigration, you know, and the valve will flow both ways. You know, there's a lot of Americans working in Dublin now because of Google and Apple and all of these, you know, companies. So I think we can only improve, you know, from travel and from shared experiences and from exposure to other cultures. You know, I mean, I think Ireland as a nation of immigrants, you know, and America as a nation of immigrants can see the value of that, you know, of allowing possibly easier movement of people. I won't say freer, but easier movement of people, you know.
You know, what is that Irish expression that says, what is it? It's in the shelter of each other that people live.
There's Scott, Kayla, Murray and Nadina. Yeah, I've written it in nearly every newsletter since the pandemic. Because it really is true. Like, you know, and I think the pandemic more than anything taught us that. You know, I mean, my God, when I think back, Adrian, like to last year, and I don't know, you know, how you felt, but I was certainly nervous about, you know, what lockdown meant and would we ever again be able to see people, you know, like we were told to work from home kind of thing. I mean, I came into the museum the Monday morning. We closed Friday. Yeah. And I came in on Monday, and by the end of that week, I had several people ring to say, like, look, if you need anything, you know, we'll socially distance inside, but I can't stay at home, you know. And these were retired people, like they were already at home. But this idea of being shut away, like, and not being able to touch people and, you know, not shake hands and all of this, it was amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we forget that. Like, that was one of the things brought up too yesterday. You know, really, like, there's kind of a silent grief maybe in the community. People weren't able to go home for funerals. We had a death in my family last October, the first time, thank God. You know, I've been an immigrant since 2005. But, you know, I wasn't able to go home for the funeral of my sister's father-in-law. And even, you know, the funerals were so small in size. And people weren't able to shake hands. And, you know, so the nature of mourning even was changed, you know. And so I think we're very cognizant, I hope, going forward, like, that really we do have more in common together, and we are stronger together. And the only way forward, you know, is together. Like, we're, you know, it's whether it's your smaller community or for, you know, the entity here, the museum, our membership, like, to, you know, to come in to support us, to donate to the campaign, but even just to turn up, you know, just to come and have the numbers, you know, attend talks, and it's
right.
All very interconnected, you know.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to, you made reference there, and of course we do know that particularly those fighting traffic in Manhattan this week, the UN, you know, the UN has had its annual conference. Yeah. And
Security Week or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Taoiseach Micheál Martin did, a matter of fact, he was all over the place. He definitely made a concerted effort, you know, to reach out and to meet and to, mm-hmm. you know, to see people. But also, he didn't come with an open checkbook. He definitely, mm-hmm. He took a lot in, and that much mm-hmm. we know. And mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, the Irish government, which has been extremely generous and engaging, you know, through the years,
mm-hmm.
That they will continue, you know, to you know, to do their best. However, it is not the Irish government's responsibility mm-hmm. to fund, you know, the various cultural mm-hmm. you know, entities across the United States. Their
yeah.
assistance and their endorsement is very important, but it's mm-hmm. not like they can set up branches. It's up to us at the end of the
right.
day.
Mm-hmm.
All grants, you know, are obviously very welcome, mm-hmm. and but they're not increasing. They're barely holding mm-hmm. as, and in particular in your situation there in Albany, mm-hmm. where you have moved to an excellent, a great building. Describe the building for us.
Well, you know, it's beautiful. It's it was the old pump station or pump house, so it pumped water, you know, up the hill here. We're at the bottom of Clinton Street, so it's red brick. I'd say it's at least 200. So I should have actually Googled this before I talked to you. But Quackenbush Square, like the little building next to us, is one of the oldest ones. It's the old English bar now, and that was built by the Quackenbush, you know, a Dutch
yeah.
kind of family. So. It's definitely 200 years old. We have, I don't know, the ceiling's 25 feet or 30 feet high in certain areas, you know.
Mm.
So it was owned by Albany City, you know, for a long time. And I was talking to somebody recently when we were renovating, and he said they used to park the trucks in here because it was just this cavernous, empty, you know, space.
Yeah.
And then about 30 or so years ago, Mayor Jennings at the time and a few more of them got together and kind of used it as an exhibition space for the visitor centre. And then, you know, as time went by, I suppose the thought was like that the visitor center was there to work with the other cultural partners, you know, and so it didn't really need an exhibition space itself. So they still are in the office side, and they have a lovely gift shop and all of the, you know, brochures and things. But we have the exhibition side. And so it's, you know, it's a fabulous, we've kind of three different rooms. We've a gallery in the front, and then the theatre leads off of that 60-seater theatre. And then we've got this large exhibition space at the back, which has, you know, our permanent exhibition will be in there about the story of the Irish in America. Very biographically driven, you know, the stories that we were talking about, Adrian. It's
sure.
Not a whole pile of, you know, the Erie Canal is X amount of miles long. It's not that, you know, it's biographies. And then we've our gorgeous library and our office space, you know, and finally, like, we have room to display all of the things that we have collected over the years. You know, we have gorgeous artwork that we were never really able to display in full, you know.
Yeah.
So we're excited going forward, you know. But your point about the Irish government, you know, too, is very well taken. You know, I mean, as you said, they did support us. But it was amazing that they were able to support during COVID, you know, when Ireland was hit so bad. So, as you said, like, we're very grateful. We do always get the immigrant support program grant, you know, but I'm sure, you know, politically that must be a kind of a hot potato issue at home, because I'm sure Irish taxpayers are thinking, you know, what are they funding things in America for, you know? So, so we really, I mean, I'm glad that you're appealing to our community, because this is, if there's apathy, like, or confidence that these cultural institutions will last, they won't always last, you know.
No.
There's costs are going up, you know, wages are going up, rent is going up, everything is increasing,
sure.
You know, and so it's important to diversify where the funding is from, because you can't really rely on any one source, you know.
Absolutely. And again, in the aging community, a lot of the philanthropic money has dried up as well.
Yeah.
And time is marching on. Anyway, this is not, for those who are listening here and expecting a massive shakedown. I'm glad you're still listening, because actually 35 years next month, right? since the foundation of the establishment of the museum. And $35 will, you know, will, is that, does that include a membership?
Well, no, we didn't do that. So, to be honest, our membership is actually quite reasonably cost, I would say. So a senior membership is only $30, but this is specifically a fundraising campaign that will run for a year. We call it a 35 for 35, but you can give multiples of 35 if you would like.
So, oh, absolutely, No, but
it's just a donation, and you know, we give them our tax number, so they'll get it if they, you know, get the donation.
It's 501c3, you know. You're transferring what you might give to the government and putting a penny on the pound to this. So if somebody really wanted to help, do we do the $30 first and then the 35, or do we do the 35 now and then have the membership? I mean, it wouldn't kill anybody, or very few people, I think, wouldn't balk at, you know, $65. I'm up in the ante already here, but that would be terrific. The membership, what do you get for the membership?
So membership is basically definitely free entrance to the museum. I mean, at the moment we're free for everybody, but we won't be from next month when our exhibitions are in. And then you get preference for things like the book club, or we do members only launches and talks, that kind of stuff. You get 10% discount in the shop, and you just get, you get a member's newsletter, which, you know, has some history in it, has some literature, has a little bit of community, you know, feel in there. And I suppose you get the goodwill of knowing that you're supporting a worthy cause. But, you know, it is important, like the membership, there's no doubt about it. You know, it comes into play on so many levels, because you have to, you know, when you apply for other grants, you tell them how many members you're serving and all of that. So even aside from the money, just to have the numbers of support to say that we, you know, we do have this many members.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and because now everything is online, our talks are online, and when we get the new exhibition permanently mounted, we'll do a virtual tour of that. you know, there's, you don't have to live in Albany to take advantage of what we offer here, you know. And then there are layers of membership. So one, the $100 membership gets you a reciprocal, the North American Museum reciprocal little sticker, and that gets you into 1,100 museums across the country. So we're, you know, there's a lot on offer that is not just for our own museum, you know.
Give us, now, you have, random now, I'm going to ask you, like, what do you have going on this week, next week, you know?
We just finished with Terry Galway last night. He gave us a brilliant talk about the history of the Fire Department of New York. And on I love Terry. I know I'd have him speak every week if I could. And then on Monday, we're doing this series. It's the centenary of the War of Independence. So every month I do a kind of what happened in Ireland on this month. So, of course, September is where, in 1921, is when they decided on who was going to go to London for the talks. You know, there still is a little bit of hassle in the north of Ireland, even though partition has been enacted. So we do that monthly. That's on Monday night. And then on Tuesday night, we have James Kennelly, who's a professor up in Skidmore College, and he's going to give a talk about Horace Plunkett and the cooperative creamery movement at home in Ireland.
Oh, my God, how about that?
Mm-hmm. I know. So we, you know, we have a very diverse range. Like next month, of course, we'll mark Halloween. We have a musical performance by a local group called Toss the Feathers, who will sing sort of older historical songs about the canal workers or the Civil War soldiers, sure, that kind of thing. We'll have an Irish academic from Trinity College who's going to talk about Irish Gothic and literature. We have Brendan Fay talking about his own life and the activism he's done in terms of LGBTQ rights. We have a Ulysses book club. So honestly, I don't know how we're doing it. We have loads of things on.
Okay. And now, social media, tell us about that. I can tell you all I know about social media. I have somebody else do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had somebody else do it. We are on everything. I'm not great at Instagram. Well, we are on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and we have a YouTube channel. So we're at Irish American Muse, I think is our little shorthand. But if you Google Irish American Heritage Museum, it will come up. And we have a website, you know, too, with all of the talks listed on that. And the donate button is there, the become a member button, but also the Zoom registration, you know, is there. So if the speaker is not in Albany, we only do it on Zoom. And if the speaker comes into the museum, we do it on Facebook and we do it in person. So, for instance, like when Dara, the professor in Trinity College, when Dara is speaking next month, I think it's the 28th of October, that'll be a Zoom. You know, so anyone can register from wherever they are and we'll do it.
Okay, so bottom line is if you don't have to wind it up, you're on it. And,
exactly.
Dr. Elizabeth Stack, Executive Director of the Irish American Heritage Museum, friends in Albany, where, yes, you can call. The telephone number is 518-427-1916. You know, and that takes me back to one of the earlier directors there, Jeff Cleary, who somehow grabbed that very significant...
I heard, yeah. very important thing, the 1916 Rising.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, but to really, and it's a fantastic website. It really is. Congratulations on that one, too. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Albany, friends, if you're looking for a place that has a green door, a falchion, and an Irish flag, and up on top of the door, there is, you know, the original sign from 35 years ago. You maintain that was missing, you know, for years.
I don't know where we found. I found it under a box of things in our old storeroom, but maybe they had found it before that as well. You know, we put things in safe places and then we forget where we put them.
It's all right. I thought Jeff Cleary might have copped it on the way out the door, but it's great. So we take that back. Dr. Elizabeth Stack, good luck to you. And at a time when indeed we seem to be losing. And apathy has set in big time with our museums and our places of heritage. It's very important. It's not going to cost a lot. But I think that your newsletter is one that everybody should get, because it's riddled. It's a fountain of information, and let's do it. So your website
is www.irish-us.org. And, you know, yeah, we try to be a little community, whether it's online or in person, you know. But, yeah, I love the mission of the museum. I'm so glad to be given the opportunity to preserve, you know, not just our heritage, but our culture. It's a living, breathing, you know, people are very still into Irish music and Irish dance and all that. So we're delighted to be able to cover it all. And I think, you know, speaking about COVID, wasn't that what got us all through, you know, was all the music and concerts and everything. That was what we missed, was going out and socializing and going to theatre. And so to be able to do it online, even, you know, I think we realise how much we love it, you know, when it was threatened.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so thank you so much.
As a storyteller, you know, living next door to one of the greatest storytellers, you know, that Ireland ever produced, I want to, again, not only do support you, but hopefully that people will, you know, pay attention. We see what happens when we don't pay attention. So, again, thank you. Thanks for joining. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Irish Radio Network, USA.